Welcome to Impulse Kitty Productions' digital film podcast, where we discuss everything and anything in the digital film world, which includes television shows, Blu-rays, the latest electronics, anything and everything to do with digital or film. So kick back, relax for the next hour or so, and enjoy Impulse Kitty Productions' digital film podcast. Run while you still can, because I am full of jello. I don't know. I don't even know what that was. Anyway, welcome to Impulse Kitty Productions' digital film podcast. Sorry, we've kind of procrastinated about this podcast. A lot of things happen. My wife's busy. Sherry's busy. You know, the kids got sick. And so we kind of, you know, I kind of told her, you know, while you're working tonight, I'll do a podcast while I'm rendering out some footage. So you got me solo, so sorry about that. So we're going to review the Walking Dead episode of last week, even though the newest episode is coming out this week. And we'll do another podcast, I think a catch-up podcast, I'm hoping, sometime early this week. So with me and Sherry. And so tonight I'll review the Killer Within episode of The Walking Dead and The Amazing Spider-Man 3D Blu-ray. And touch base on maybe some camera stuff that I kind of want to talk about, especially Red's discounting prices and Canon's soon to come out C100 and 6D and, you know, Sony stuff, and maybe, you know, just getting around all those camera companies and just kind of telling you what I think lately, maybe. Every time I mention one camera company or another, I get in trouble because everyone's always biased towards their, you know, what they like. And, you know, it's like having an argument with an Apple or PC person. It's just like, always gets heated, you know, but it comes down to personal preference. One thing I want to get to, though, is something that I kind of glossed over last podcast. What is Impulse Kitty Productions? You might be wondering, why are you guys doing podcasts? Why are you guys even on the net? Who is Impulse Kitty Productions? Well, I'm going to give you an answer. It might be a little bit rambly, so I apologize for that. Well, Impulse Kitty Productions started 2 years ago. I want to say the idea of it was 2 years ago. The implementation has been about a year and a half in the making, I guess. Impulse Kitty Productions right now is a nonprofit production company. We don't do any profit gigs right now because of lack of equipment. We're still, if you want to call it film school, but that's kind of what I'm doing right now, is creating my own kind of film school. And we're in these stages of learning and kind of just doing nonprofit stuff to build up demo reels. And anyway, but before I get to that, it all kind of started back when I was like 10. I always knew I loved movies. I fucking always was watching like Back to the Future and like obviously Ghostbusters and Weird Science, Revenge of the Nerds, you know, all these kind of different genre movies. And I was just fucking always into movies, man. And but my thing was, I gravitated towards the making of the movie. You know, that was where, you know, I thought the most interesting things happen. It's like, you know, every time I saw something, you know, because back then, obviously, there was no special features. If you bought a movie on VHS, it's not like at the end, you know, you could fast forward on a VHS or an extra VHS came taped to it with special features. You know, you were lucky to get some behind the scene footage. You know, you had to go to like to Universal Studios, or you'd have to catch a special on TV, because there was no fucking TiVo then, unless you had a VHS or a Betamax recorder, you know. So it was very difficult to get behind the scene footage back in the 80s, and it got easier, I think, in the 90s to catch more of the behind the scenes. And by, you know, obviously the early 2001, Everybody was doing, you know, DVD came out, and not only DVD, but, you know, everybody was interested in how music videos were made, or, and so MTV would do, like, you know, making the video, or how this, so it kind of became like this thing where everybody was interested in how things were made. But I was always interested from, you know, since I was like 10 that I can remember. And anytime I saw something that was being made, in fact, I think I remember going to the first Captain EO back in California when Captain EO opened. You know, they had the making or semi kind of making of it while you queued up to go into the theater to watch it. And that right there, just the making of it, the set building, the costumes and makeup and the process I was always in. I never knew like how long a production would take. I always thought, hey, I was 10. I was a kid. I always thought, well, yeah, man, you know, that must have taken an entire day to shoot, you know, as naive as I was. But, so, you know, I picked up my sister had like a RCA VHS camcorder, and, you know, I would pick it up at 10, 11, 12, just be shooting comedy sketches with my nieces and my nephews, my brother, my cousin. And we would shoot, you know, these semi lip singing, dancing skits or whatever, you know. And, you know, there wasn't any editing software that you can get your hands on. So, you know, you would edit in camera, you know, you'd press record, you'd stop, you'd press record, you'd stop. And, you know, you kind of would create something out of this editing. Or you would have two VHS machines and, like, you would record and pause and play and then record. You know, you would try to find a way to edit in camera, usually. So that was my kind of endeavors into directing. And I remember from an early age that I was interested more in being behind the camera and the creative process from beginning to end than being in front of the camera. Now, not to say that I wasn't comfortable in front of the camera. You know, I will say that sometimes, you know, I'm a goofball. So, I mean, I like to make people laugh and, you know, so I didn't mind being in front of the camera, you know, especially because till this day, I still have like limited cast members that I can put in front of the camera. So, you know, until that day comes where I can call actors and get them paid or whatever, or hopefully do pro bono work for a short film or music video tribute or something like that, then. But I'd like to not be in front of the camera one day and just completely just be behind the camera. But anyway, so the passion kind of was always there throughout the years. And as I got older, different passions, as one, you know, gets older, you start like looking at your options, you know, you start going to junior high and then high school, then, you know, so there was options there, but, you know, there were, I guess, more or less passing fancies in a way where, you know, there was a time where I was, you know, giving my friends and everybody haircuts, you know, and I had a knack for it, you know. Yes, I did have a knack for it. It was, you know, I styled people's hairs. I was, you know, I was their go-to guy, you know. I even cut Sherry's hair, you know, but a lot of my best friends would come to me for haircuts, and I'd style their hair, I'd give them the haircuts, and I was all self-taught. I don't know where it came from either. So for a while there, I thought, you know, this might be, you know, something. Go to cosmetology, you know, become a fucking, you know, hairdresser or whatever. You know, yeah, I know, sounds kind of weird for a guy, but hey, I have no shame, man. I was born with a vagina. No, I'm just joking. No, but yeah, I wanted to be in cosmetology, you know, to do style and cut hair. But cutting hair was just this idea that never kind of, you know, by 18, I had gotten cancer, testicular cancer, and, you know, all this, you know, radiation and chemotherapy went on, you know, through 18 through 19, and it's kind of left a little bit of a mess. And I developed these shaky hands, which I have still. If I overuse them, sometimes I'll be typing or trying to put something together that requires a screwdriver or a hammer, and if I kind of use my hands too much on a project or anything, and they start really like starting to shake. So, then I kind of knew it's like, my hair cutting days were over, because you don't want someone with shaky hands around your hair. So that was gone. And but no big deal, The other thing that I kind of was passionate about, and this was not too long ago, I think 3 years ago, I developed a passion for cooking. Because I love to eat good food. Who doesn't? But there was I was always afraid of cooking. I was always bad at it. And I told myself, you know what? I'm fucking gonna learn how to cook, damn it. So I started watching the Food Channel Network or Food Network, and I started watching these cooking shows, Emeril and Bobby Flav, and these Guy Fieri or whatever, these shows, these cooking shows, and I started, doing the recipes and whatnot, and actually learning how to cook pretty damn good, and found myself very interested in it. I still actually cook a little bit on the side. I have a lot more on my plate now. So I have less time to cook, but I can make you damn good chicken. I make good fried chicken, some awesome wings and barbecue chicken and fried rice and the best top ramen you'll ever eat. But so that was an idea. I thought, maybe I can go to culinary school. Well, that kind of trailed off, and I was, working, and I was always involved in some way in my jobs. I worked at Blockbuster for like 2 years, and that was, I was seeing movies, and then I worked for Disney in a certain entertainment capacity. So I always kind of try to stay in that mainstream, where it was like, I was doing something that had to do with movies or theatricality, and so in a sense, show business. And I never, th you know, I and you know, in 2001, we did a backtracking a little bit. In 2001 was when the passion kind of kicked in again. I had kind of lost it, and this was, also after the haircutting thing. So, I think it was, I was 2020 or 21. I can't remember exactly. Was it 2001 or 2000? Anyway, I'd venture to say it was 2001 when NSYNC came out with their Celebrity album, and the single Pop came out. Yes, NSYNC Pop. You'll never be able to nail me down with the music, man, because I could be listening to NSYNC one day and Celine Dion the other, and fucking Guns N' Roses the next, and fucking Aerosmith and fucking Black Eyed Peas and some Nicki Minaj, so that's one good thing that my wife says is, like, I can never nail you down, because there'll be one day you'll be listening to some pop funky stuff, and then you'll be listening to country, and then you'll be listening to the hardcore metal stuff and Rage Against the Machine and I'm naming all these old bands and whatnot, but or you'll be listening like to 50 Cent or fucking Eminem. Well, who doesn't listen to Eminem? But yeah, so but anyway, but it was NSYNC and Pop, and we saw the making of their Pop video, and this was, after the success of No Strings Attached, where they broke these records, and everybody, knew about Bye Bye Bye, and It's Gonna Be Me, and MTV had this behind the scenes, making the video of these, not only their videos, but at the time, Jessica Simpson, Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears, everybody was 98 Degrees, everybody was popular. It was like the pop phenomenon, and everybody had their behind the scenes making the video, and that's where it started, kind of like, hey, wait a minute, I got a camcorder, I could afford it. And at this point, DV camcorders were, everywhere. So, you and then, you could actually, put them onto iMovie. This was my first also introduction to anything really Apple. I always kind of knew about Apple, but I never, I never, I tried to edit with, what was it? These cheesy softwares that you would buy on a PC. And I would, you know, that was my first introduction to nonlinear editing. So my first attempt to get back into it. So, you know, I like the song Pop. I think we can get our friends together. And I learned the choreography. I you know, taught it to my friends, and we said, you know, let's go out and shoot this. And at first I told my cousin, you know, cause he had a really good PC. He knew his computer. So he, you know, he builds his own PCs, and he had a nonlinear editing suite. I can't remember exactly what software it was. So I was all jazzed. I was like, hey dude, do you think you can, like, and he had a high camcorder. And I was like, do you think you can shoot this for us? You know, I would love for you to direct this. And, you know, I already got all the choreography down and kind of like a basic idea and whatnot. So we went out and we shot it, kind of, you know, obviously running gun stuff. And under the direction of my cousin. And something went right and then something went completely wrong. So what happened in the end was we got the footage back and we, you know, he did the best, I did the best to put it together. And I you know, we didn't shop it around kind of thing, but we showed it to a lot of people, and some people were kind of impressed and some people were like, oh, that's cute. And, you know, reviewing it, I didn't get exactly what I wanted. And not to say that my cousin did a bad job directing it. It was that I think that we didn't take the time to really talk about what my concept was and what I wanted to deliver. So, you know, and he had, I think, a different idea, and it was kind of a mess in terms of, it was a good test video, I think. And I gotta keep it honest. It was, to me, it wasn't good enough. And that's where, you know, you have to, in filmmaking or photography, you have to be your harshest critic, and you can't just, you know, pass by the bare minimum and be like, okay, that's just good enough. No, it's never good enough. You should always, like, strive to be a perfectionist. You should have OCD if you're in the filmmaking business, just because I think that makes you much more attuned to kind of spot your own flaws and be like, okay, you know, you learn from your mistakes. You know, the best thing you can do is fuck up, because that teaches you so much. You know, I guess you don't have to be, I mean, there is a point where you have to be kind of, you know, but very OCD about certain things, but, you know, not to say that, you know, if you're directing something, you don't want to be micromanaging like the key grip or the fucking DP. You know, you don't want to be micromanaging everybody to that point. I just meant, like, in the sense where it's like you should always strive to better yourself. Like, you know, this would never settle for good enough kind of thing. That's what I'm kind of trying to get the point. So you surround yourself with a group of people like that have the same mentality. It's never good enough, and, you know, something's gonna pop. So it was good enough. That was the consensus. Like, it was good enough. It was, you know, and we all walked away like thinking that was it. You know, we did it. And my friend at the time, William, well, still is my friend, but you know, he thought it was pretty interesting. There wasn't that much feedback, honestly. It was kind of like this thing that I had in my head that I wanted it to be, you know, make a statement. Like, it was important to me. It was my first kind of introduction to something more professional. So I sat down and I said, you know what? I'm not really happy with this, guys. And I sat down with everybody. I said, look, I think I can do better. You know, let me direct it. Let me fine tune the choreography. Let me figure out exactly where I want to go. And within a week, I think it was less than a week that I already knew and fine-tune the choreography. And then we started working on the choreography. We said, okay, what I want to do is take the choreography, keep that the same because it's awesome choreography, but let's change. We don't want to copy. The first video was almost like trying to copy what NSYNC was and what they were doing at the time, what they were wearing at the time. And what I wanted to do is, like, well, to make it more relatable, let's not be in sync or represent in sync in that way. Let's pretend it's actually our video. What would we do? So we kind of just shot with as normal clothes as possible. What would we really wear? What looked good? A little bit, you know, flary at the time, you know, if we went out, like so, you know, we went a different way. And I shot that early in the morning. I remember because that was the only time you could shoot anything before crowds started coming around or asking questions. And, you know, you get in, you get out, man. You don't have permission to shoot in certain places. So we did it. Like, we would wake up at 5 a.m. and just get everybody, and it was cold at the time, and get everybody out there, get the shots, and, you know, boom, boom, boom. I shot a running gun style, did things at the speed of thought, and, you know, went back and bought an Apple iMac. You know, I don't know if you remember that iMac, that is the one with the it had like a silver neck, and there was a base, a white base, and it would spit out the DVD drive, and, you know, you can move the screen. Anyway, so iMovie, that was my first introduction to a better nonlinear editing system than the previous PC incarnation. They gave me much more control over the footage, and I went in there and I fucking, for I think 2 straight days, I was editing, and because to me it was the first time that I was able to manipulate and create video footage as I wanted to, almost. So it was so amazing to me, and I was so captivated by being able to actually deliver something that looked semi-professional. So I'd forgotten to eat, I'd forgotten to sleep, and, you know, by the time I was done, I was a little worse for wear. I actually developed an ulcer, and, you know, anyway, we won't go into that, but yeah, till this day, I sometimes still obsess when I'm editing or color correcting. I'll just sit there for hours and I won't eat or sleep, but I've gotten a little bit better at it. But anyway, so I took that and I made a VHS and made a DVD copy. I burned a DVD or VCD. Can't remember. Yeah, bad memory. But, so I definitely had it on VHS, and we re-showed it to people. We were like, hey, you know that video we did, you know, Pop, and, you know, we kind of redid it. You know, I ended up directing it. We kind of felt that the other one was kind of a test video. So we kind of called it a test video. And people were blown away. In terms of not like, oh, that's the best shit I've ever seen, but it was like, they would be asking, like, well, who sings the song? Like, you know, they actually kind of forgot that it was in sync. They didn't have the connection. And then when I told them who it was, they were like shocked that they even liked the song, you know. But it was because it was us doing it, and it was more, the audience was able to connect because we weren't trying to be something we were not. We were amplifying who we were, and we weren't wearing ridiculous costumes, and we weren't, you know, it was, hey, there's Ruben and Sherry and William and Jesse, and look, you know, they're, yeah, and what I try to do is match each voice to the person. So not only did that work, you know, out pretty well, so I went, you know, it's like, I was happy, and I had other videos in mind, which I never got to. So, you know, flash forward 8 years, you know, 7 years, 2008. I think it was 2008 when I finally shot another, can't remember. I think it might've been 2008 when I finally, you know, I bought my first Final Cut, Pro, suite, not the studio version, but Final Cut Express. That was the only thing I could afford, and a Mac Mini. And, I said, you know, I want to get back into making some stuff better. It always been a hobby, you know. So I shot a couple more music video tributes, and the tributes were a way to not only exercise my editing ability to making something, but you know, I don't really write, and didn't have any concepts for short films. I mean, I would do comedy sketches, and so we'd film those kind of things, and mostly we did a lot of music video tributes. I have a DV tape, and it was always a hobby, and you know, everybody was like, man, you should think about doing this for a living. And I was like, yeah, no, not really. I want to keep it fun, and I, you know, I really don't want to kind of make, you know, I'm fine with, you know, I was just kind of like, it's good enough for what it is. And once again, that idea, good enough. So that went on and on, and then I stopped. And then the technology changed. The DSLR was born, and you know, Canon, the 5D Mark II changed the industry, and now you were able to shoot things, the T2i, the T3i, you know, you were able to shoot a semi-cinematic quality, you know, to get that elusive cinematic look at a low cost price. And you know, the editing suites were becoming more accessible and more sophisticated, and the computers were the, you know, everything just became more streamlined, I guess you can say. So it kind of piqued my interest again. I was like, you know, I think, you know, and it was 30 at the time, I think. Yeah, because I'm 33 now. So yeah, it was 31, I think, when it finally hit. The seed started getting planted when I was 30. Like, I think I might want to do this for a living. The fear was failing, I think. It was always, you know, I don't want to do it for a living. And what if someone just says I suck? Can I deal with that? So that was like my fear was, you know, if I do this, will I suck at it? You know, will someone get lost, loser? You have any business holding the camera? You know, that would destroy my fucking world. Because, you know, I had already kind of, you know, lost my haircutting career, my cooking career. And I was just like, I don't know if I can take that kind of a rejection, you know. And but I got past that. I was like, you know, you'll never know. And I don't know if it was because I was in my 30s, and I was kind of getting tired of working in different places for different people. I wanted to build something for my own and create my own legacy and put, you know, my talents to the test. And so Impulse Kitty Productions was born. I told my wife, look, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life from here on out. I want to live and breathe filmmaking and photography. And for a while, there I told her there's not going to be any revenue because I have to study and I have to learn and catch up on everything I've missed out on and whatnot. So she was really super supportive, and she loves taking pictures too. So her peak interest as a photographer and a director, because once again, the technology was out there to shoot, you know, raw photographs and, you know, to get your depth of field, your, you know, to get professional imagery, you know, it was out there. So there was no reason not to delve in it like everybody else is doing it. But the problem is like, you know, I told her, so look, there's a lot of competition out there right now. I mean, everybody's trying to dip their dick in the chocolate factory. And so we got to, you know, do this right. If we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. And, you know, everybody has their different ways of doing it. You know, some go fucking balls to the wall and others kind of tiptoe. And we're kind of like the tiptoe people because I think we have a lot to lose in terms of investing, because we do have 3 kids, 7 cats, and, you know, a house payments and stuff like that. So car payments and, you know, so the plan is it was to like start with music video tributes, start, you know, exercising those muscles again, you know, do nonprofit music video tributes. And a lot of people say, why are you doing, you know, someone else's work? Why don't you do something original? It's like, yeah, we have a couple of original comedy sketches and a short film I have in mind, but the music video tributes allow us to pay tribute to these artists. And, you know, if I was like a music person, I would love to see someone like take my material, so long as, like, you know, they didn't profit off of it, and make a music video out of that material. And that way I can see how that song affected them. And I think it's a cool concept. So I wanted to keep it that way, and I wanted to make sure people knew, look, you know, these music video tributes, we're lip singing these music video tributes. These aren't our music. We don't intend to profit off of this. I mean, we don't intend to profit off of anybody's copyrighted material, but we do want to use it to make music videos that, you know, how did this song affect us, and stretch those muscles in storytelling and you know, editing and color correcting, and just in a more compressed kind of fashion, because music videos are, you know, just montages, you know. They can be cut as stories, but you know, until I flex those other muscles and get those other projects going, that's what we do. And we're taking these baby steps, right? We're buying gear. Gear is like the most expensive thing, because, you know, you to buy a good slider or a jib or even a pair of sticks, you know, tripods, a really good tripod. You know, you really need a good tripod and a good fluid head. And, you know, a lot of people may argue, it's like, oh, no, you don't. You can, you know, bare bones and whatnot. But the reality is that, you know, I want to take that approach where Impulse Kitty Productions wants to, it's never good enough kind of attitude. Like, you know, I always kind of want to strive for more. And, you know, right now I'm in that learning stage. I'm testing out DaVinci Resolve. I'm learning Red Cine X. I'm learning Final Cut Pro 10. I'm trying to learn Premiere. I'm trying to learn all these different things. I'm trying to acquire as much knowledge on each different camera. I've actually done extensive tests on color correction tests and editing tests and transcoding tests, and on like the FS100, FS700, 5D Mark II, 5D Mark III, the Red Scarlett, the Red Epic, Red One footage, Blackmagic cinema camera, T3i, T4i, T2i footage. So, you know, I've kind of been, you know, working in all these, you know, mediums where I either do pro bono work or just to get as much experience as possible. So that's where we are right now. We're kind of like in this baby stage where we're building our gear, where we're trying to build a demo reel by putting music video tributes together. But, you know, and trying to find the right camera for what we do. And that's why I've been trying out so many different formats and you know, what camera is the most versatile and what, you know, what gives me, because there is no perfect camera, you know, but there is a perfect camera for what you do and the aesthetic you're looking for, especially if you plan to shoot a certain type of genre you know, whatever. But, you know, you could rent. I would, you know, what we're doing right now is we're renting a camera for our production, because we can't afford a big, big camera, you know. So you know, that's what it is. We want to provide a service where we can shoot short films for people. We can get hired to shoot music videos for independent bands that are trying to get their name out there. Events, possibly. Not really sure how I feel about shooting events. I don't know if I'm that kind of director or kind of photographer, but I'm definitely, you know, we can do photography, you know, beauty shots and stuff like that. But the thing at the heart of Impulse Kitty Productions is the goal is to offer a real cinematic, professional photos, and, you know, very studio quality for not a studio price. You know what I mean? Because a lot of these people, like if they're an indie band, I mean, it's hard enough to get, you know, equipment together, as I said before, but, you know, to get someone to shoot a good music video, to shop it around to real record labels, you know, I think, you know, production value is very important when it comes to music and trying to sell yourself as a product, you know, so that's what kind of we want to strive to. Like if someone's trying to create a short film and say, you know, they can call us and be like, look, you know, you have the gear, you have the experience. It's like, I have this script. I'm not sure if I want to direct it or I want you to direct it, but I definitely want, you know, Impulse Kitty Productions involved in in either editing or coloring or like shooting it, you know, because we were, you know, I don't know if any of this makes any sense or we're just rambling, but you know, it's still in its infancy stage what we're doing, because there's so much to learn, and I want to make sure that my film school is me doing my own things and my own fuck ups rather than doing my own things and fucking up on someone else's time and money. And I think by 2014, we should be ready to start taking jobs and putting, you know, stuff out there. Right now, it's all about getting a community together of fans and people and getting our stuff out there to see. I was like, okay, this guy, you know, can do this. And, you know, so that's why we've kind of spread our band to podcasting. You know, we got our Impulse Kitty Productions Facebook page, Twitter page, Vimeo Pro page, YouTube page, and we got our podcast going now. So we're trying to kind of reach everybody in the filmmaking community and kind of establish some sort of legitness thing, whatever you want to call it. It's late at night, guys. Sorry. My vocabulary's gotten a little bleh. But that's the long and short of it, I guess. More long and rambly. But once I have, you know, a definitive... In fact, you know what? I kind of did a description on our Facebook page of what we're about. And I guess I should probably read that to you instead of rambling. I should have just read it to you instead of rambling on here. So, you know, I wrote a description on all my pages, you know, my Facebook page, my YouTube page, so people know exactly kind of what we are and what we're all about. So I wrote, Impulse Kitty Productions is currently a nonprofit, diverse, independent production company that spans the field of visual entertainment, from our nonprofit music video tributes to comedy sketches, short films, etc. The list goes on and on. Impulse Kitty Productions hopes to tackle any project of any genre with enthusiasm and professionalism, and having fun making the magic that is digital cinema. And you always knew that. Oh, anyway. But yeah, that was that's pretty much, if that makes any sense. So if you guys kind of want to check us out, we have links on our podcast page and to our Facebook page. And our Facebook page has, like, we're every link, like, to our YouTube pages and whatnot. So, you know, check us out there, man. It's, or just, like I said, Google us, Impulse Kitty Productions, and, you know, Impulse Kitty One Word Productions, and you'll find us, man, like, we're all over the place. We're the only people with that name. So, or IKP Films. We actually just registered for our own domain for the first time. We're building an actual website that people can go to, and you know, so they don't have to kind of be like, okay, well, let me go to his Twitter. Let me, you know, if you want like an entire immersion in Impulse Kitty Productions, you can go to our website, Impulse Kitty Production, ImpulseKitty.com. That's the domain name. Don't go there yet, because if you go to ImpulseKitty.com, there's not going to be anything. But that's we register that domain. Now we're just kind of finding a web host and putting content out there. So that's the long and short of it, of Impulse Kitty Productions. And I've been rambling on here. Let me check to see if I'm, I'm good on time here, man. But, so let's get down to, enough of that, let's get down to the Amazing Spider-Man 3D Blu-ray review. Now, for you people that love the tech specs, Blu-ray.com has the video codec is an MPEG-4 MVC. The video resolution is 1080p. Aspect ratio is 240:1. Original aspect ratio is 239:1. The audio is a DTS HD Master Audio 5.1 track. Also comes in French Dolby Digital 5.1, Spanish Dolby Digital 5.1. Subtitles include English, SDH, French, Spanish. It's a 50 gig Blu-ray disc, 4 disc set, 3 Blu-ray discs, 1 DVD, UV digital copy, DVD copy, and a Blu-ray 3D. Blu-ray.com gave the movie itself a 4.0, and the video quality of the non-3D Blu-ray a 4.5. The 3D Blu-ray got a 3.0, and I'll kind of talk about that in a bit. The audio got a 5.0, and the extras got a 4.5 out of 5. So overall, Blu-ray.com gave it a 4.0. So, yeah, the reason they gave the 3D, it's a solid presentation. It was shot on the Red cameras, Red Epics, and so you're definitely getting good quality. But the problem with the 3D, I also read that it was dark. And I got the disc, and I said, well, you know, sometimes you read something, and maybe someone's TV wasn't calibrated right or something. But yeah, it was a pretty dark movie. It was like, if you've ever seen Fright Night in 3D, it's kind of difficult to watch that movie, because it's really dark, and it's hard to make out things. So when you're watching the Spider-Man 3D, it's really good 3D. You know, it was shot in 3D, and it was handled pretty well. But the shortcoming of it is it's once you put on those 3D glasses, the image gets really darker for some reason. It's not as bright, as vivid as say the Avengers. So it was, I would probably watch The Amazing Spider-Man 50-50. Like, I would watch it in its 2D presentation 50% of the time, and the other 50% I would probably pop on the 3D glasses. So that's why they gave it a 3.0. But the audio is solid. It's fucking amazing. If you have a home theater that can handle the DTS HD, you're in for a treat. There's a lot of good surround stuff in the back, front, center channels, awesome. And a lot of good thundering bass stuff. And and the 2D presentation was amazing. So, like I said, you people that are familiar with Red cameras, you know what they can produce. So so that's that for that. And we have the Killer Within, Walking Dead episode, season 3. Someone's Playing Games. So, as well as you all know, this is like a whole spoiler kind of podcast. So we're always going to spoil things. In fact, we're not even going to say spoilers. Like, if you listen to us right now, this is the first and last time I'm going to say, look, I'm going to spoil the living shit out of everything. We talk about everything. I love spoilers. I love spoilers. I love going into a movie knowing exactly what's going on. And why do you know, people say, why do you like doing that? Like, you know, don't you want to be surprised? It's like, you know, me, it's like reading a book and you have that image in your head, and then you watch the movie of that book, and then you see like that shit come to life, and it's like fucking amazing. Blah, 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 you know. You know, so it's kind of one of those things, you know, where I just love spoilers. It never spoils me. You know, I get more excited because I know what's coming, and I can't wait to see how it's fucking produced or taken off. So if you don't like that kind of shit, then I guess this isn't the podcast for you. Fuck, I just lost all my listeners. Oh well, I guess I'm talking to myself now. Alone, wearing a cock ring. Anyway, so A Killer Within, man, shit got real, dude. Shit got real. Rick lost his cheating, manipulating, horrible, skinny olive oil, fucking drama making wife. And T-Dog went out like a champ, saving Carol, sacrificed himself, man. You know, but, you know, I say you reap what you sow, man. You know, T-Dog had it coming because, you know, everybody in the group was suffering. Everybody looks a little worse for wear and starving and shit. T-Dog, he was fucking hoarding. He was hoarding fucking Big Macs and whatnot. So, you know, he had to go, man. You reap what you sow. You don't share those Big Macs with everybody else because, you know, it had been a solid 8 months and over an eight-month period, man. You know, he was the only one that didn't lose any weight. In fact, I think he gained more weight. So, you know, so he was obviously hoarding some food secretly or some shit. No, I'm just joking. But no, yeah, I love T-Dog. I was kind of ashamed to see him go due to the fact that I kind of wanted to see the character development with that. Because he was, you know, he was getting going. You know, he had the shield and he was getting pretty badass. But as the show that always twists you, because, you know, it follows a comic book, but not fully to its page. And that's what I like about the TV show, where it's like you can kind of, you know, you get a lot from the comic book, but, you know, it's remixed and it's pretty good. So that was kind of sad, man. And the way Lori went out, yeah, that was kind of fucked up. And, you know, was it a redeemable death? Like, you know, did it right all the wrongs she fucking did between Shane and everybody? Not really. Kind of glad she's gone. Not only will it create more of a, I think, catalyst for Rick and make him, you know, see where he's going to go with this tragic loss or whatever and this baby issue. Because, you know, in the comic book, it's clearly stated what happens to the baby and to Lori. And so I want to know if they're going to kind of do that with someone else in the group, or are they, like, how could you fucking run? How could you be in a zombie apocalypse with a baby? You know, that's also one of, like, the stupidest things in the fucking world to me. And you know, I know I might offend some people and whatnot, but look, dude, if there's a zombie apocalypse and you're about to die any second, any noise you make, anything that you do attracts walkers and can endanger the life, it's no place for fucking kids. So, you know, the episode where she took the abortion pills and spit them up because, yeah, I'm going to fucking have this baby. We're going to fucking, you know, we're going to rock this shit. We're going to make this shit work. It's like, really? Really? You're going to bring a fucking kid into this fucking piece of shit, disease-ridden, death-everywhere fucking world? I mean, you can barely keep the fucking 10-year-old or whatever Carl's age is, the fucking 12-year-old alive. And you're gonna fucking bring a baby into this shit? So my justification right there is, like, you know, for those of you that don't believe in abortion or whatever, or it's, you know, I always say it's chick's choice, but you know, do whatever you want with your body. It's, you have a right to. But, you know, in the zombie apocalypse, I would kind of like be like elbowing Lori and be like, look, you know, not for not, but this might not be the best time to have a baby. Because it might just get eaten by a fucking zombie, and I don't think you want to go through that. And that'd be kind of selfish, you know, for you to have. I don't know. It's just weird. It was a weird move. So they have a baby now. Lori's dead. T-Dog's dead. Carol's missing. And so tonight's the new episode. I don't watch it live. I don't watch cable anymore. I haven't watched cable like in 2 years almost. I watch if it's online or streaming, or Blu-ray, that's what I watch. Kind of, you know, like it better that way. Better quality, no commercials. I watch what I want to see, and I don't know. I don't watch cable anymore. I think cable's going the way of the dinosaur. So, but we're gonna, it was very emotional. It was a good show. It was a good episode. It was, you know, an emotional roller coaster. So, going back to The Amazing Spider-Man real quick, I did want to input something. Look, you know, I'm all for reboots so long as, like, you know, I'm not really, I guess, that type of guy that's going to say, look, don't make a fucking reboot. Look, if you're going to reboot anything, I'll be on board so long as you do it fucking right. You know, don't, you know, like, if you're doing a reboot of Spider-Man, you know, do it right. Do it different. I think the casting was phenomenal. I think the acting was really good. Everybody was kind of firing on their cylinders. But my biggest problem with the Amazing Spider-Man is that they spent too much time on the origin story. You know, it's like we fucking got this. We know how not too long ago the Tobey Maguire one. We know this. What I wish they would have done in this is that, you know, you start the movie and he's already Spider-Man. And if anybody needs to fill in any gaps, you know, you do little flashback sequences or do like the Incredible Hulk Edward Norton movie where it's the entire opening credits is like tells you everything that you need to know, and then the movie starts and he's the fucking Hulk. You know, he's already on the run, he's been on the run, there's no pussyfooting and shit. So, you know, the whole thing, I mean, the guy doesn't even put on the fucking suit for I think an hour into the damn thing. So I don't know, I didn't feel like I needed to see that again, so they had more room to run and develop. I don't know. That's just my idea. But I did enjoy Mark Webb's directing and visuals, and I did enjoy the movie. I had like I said, a love-hate relationship with it. There was things I loved about it, and there was things that just got on my ever fucking lasting nerves. So, but definitely a franchise that needed to be rebooted, I think. This soon, maybe not, you know, but it was, I don't know, I didn't like the other Spider-Man. I liked the first Spider-Man movie. That was decent. The other two was garbage. So, garbage, or however you want me to say it. Piece of shit. Whatever. Anyway, that's just kind of my two cents. So, that was it, boys and girls. So, before I leave you, I'm gonna get into this camera business a little bit. So we've been shopping around for a camera, and I think we finally kind of nailed it. But I'm gonna choose not to disclose, I guess, the camera that I'm planning to use on these videos because I still don't know if said camera is gonna be a success or if I have to try many others. I've worked with the footages of these different, I've kind of narrowed down to certain ones, and including one DSLR. So I'm gonna kind of, you know, take my chance on the most expensive one and see how that workflow works for me, and if it does, I might talk about it. But I think I'm kind of weary at this point, because I did talk a lot about it in my video blogs, about cameras and why we should give this a chance and why we should not give this camera a chance. And you know, it's like I said, you know, you bring up, you know, one camera, everybody starts chiming in and getting offended. So I'd rather be judged and watched by the content that I produce rather than get a stigma. It's like, oh, you're shooting with Canon, or you're shooting with Sony, or you're shooting with Blackmagic, or you're shooting with Red, or you're shooting with the fucking Alexa. Well, imagine that. But you know, it's about the content and kind of like whatever camera I choose, I think it's inconsequential despite how much it costs or how little it costs. I think if the camera provides the aesthetic that you are looking for and it works for you in your workflow, and it gives you everything you need from beginning to post and to delivery, I think that that's the camera you should use. Once again, there is no perfect camera, but there is a perfect camera for your production company, I think, or a series of them. That work for you, that streamlines for you, because there's people that will use 5D Mark II still, and that's perfectly fine. I think that so long as you're talented enough to squeeze every little bit, you know, I don't think that the camera is just gonna make you like a badass fucking director, and like so long as it's 24 frames a second, you're fucking gonna start making, you know, concentrate on production, lighting, rent your cameras if they're too expensive, spend your money on production stuff, on equipment. You know, and just, you know, rent your cameras or buy one that you can afford, and so just work on your lighting, surround yourself full of talented people, and you know, at one point, you know, there has to be a non-communal. I don't like the communal kind of decision making because, you know, at the end of the day, the director is the one who's heads on the chopping block. So make sure that you surround yourself around talented people that know what they're doing, but make sure that you know exactly what you're doing, and that your vision gets told, and it doesn't become this communal kind of decision making thing where I've seen a lot of productions get suffered by everybody putting their input and be like, no, I think it should be this way, and then you try to make that person happy, and no, I think it should be this way, no, I think, you know, so shut the fuck up, I'm the director, this is the way I want it, and this is the way it's going to be, and I'm open to suggestion, but if your suggestion doesn't make it onto the screen, just know that it's nothing personal, it's just business, because at the end of the day, dude, everybody's just, you know, if it sucks, they're gonna look at you, the director, and they're gonna be like, we didn't say anything, you know, like, everybody's kind of, you know, who made this piece of shit, you know, nobody's gonna step forward, they're gonna go straight to that, who fucking directed this shit, they're not gonna go, who DP'd this shit, or who fucking edited this shit, they're gonna be like, who fucking directed this piece of shit, and there you go. You know, so be the best you can be, but which is, you know, by learning as much as you can about everything else. That way you can hire the best people. So you know what you're looking for in an editor and a colorist, because you've kind of dabbled in those things and you kind of know what software is what, and just surround yourself. Like I said, you know, make sure that everybody knows what they're doing and they're good at what they're doing, and never accept good enough. You know, I think that life is too short to accept good enough. I think you should always be striving to make better flicks, and even if you have to spend your life savings, I'd rather die trying to make something that I've always wanted to make, or have something that I've always wanted to have, expensive or not, than die unfulfilled doing, you know, like asking myself, well, what if I had done this, or what if I had taken the leap here? You know, I think with filmmaking, with the entertainment business, I think, you know, you have to live and breathe and shit. And, you know, if you're not ready to, because there's people in the business that have been doing it for 10 years and still haven't seen the results they've wanted to see, monetarily or you know, fan base wise or whatever. So, you know, it's a business that's going to test your patience. So, I think if you're good enough, people will notice. And if you stick to your guns and you know that you're doing something really right, and you surround yourself with the right people, I think that you could be a really good success in this oversaturated market where everybody thinks they're going to be the next fucking Spielberg or fucking Fincher or whatever. You know, I by no means saying I'm good at what I do, but I think that I have a knack for what I do and an eye for what I do, and that's why I'm pursuing it. But, you know, I'm going to rough it out. You know, this is what I know I want to do for the rest of my life. And I'd rather leave that legacy of try. You know, it would be great to succeed. You know, it would suck to fail. But I think that my kids would be proud of me that at least I followed my dream. And so, I don't know if that makes any sense. So, I leave you with that. Don't settle for good enough in anything you do. Never good enough if, you know, always try and better yourself. Never good enough. If you cook something, try and better yourself next time. Experiment. You reach, you know, you should always try to better yourself. If you fucking a certain way, try and fuck a different way. You know, if you fucking, you know, if you jack off a certain way, try and jack it another way. You know, if you kiss one way, try another way and try and better yourself. If you, you take a shit one way, and, you know, try and take a shit another way. If you take a piss one way, you know, anything, you know, take a shower one way. There's many different ways to take a shower, man. You know, there's different ways. There's only so many ways I think you can take a shit and piss, and, you know, but if you're actually, you know what I mean? If you're an audiophile or musician or any kind of artist trying to, and it's not, and just remember also, you know, don't get discouraged, because your art is subjective. So not everybody's going to like it. And so long as you like what you do and the core audience that you're going for appreciate it, I think that should be enough of a success for you. Because, you know, it's all about, like they say, if you can reach one person, you know, then it was all worth it. So I think that in an industry such as the entertainment industry, there's so many different people doing such different genres in music, and it's all subjective, and it touches people in different ways, and so, you know, I mean, I think that's why we do music video tributes too, because, you know, we want to express how this song kind of made me feel and what I kind of visually thought when I heard this song, and kind of give you an insight of what we thought, whether it's me directing it or my wife or anybody. You know, that's why I like watching music videos, because, you know, I was like, I like to see how they interpret the song that they wrote or created. And sometimes it's just like, what the fuck? Is this what you really were thinking? You know, so it's, but it's subjective. It's subjective art. So there'll be people that'll hate on you, but try to develop a thick skin in this business. Try not to go on too many forums and get caught up in camera tech and whatnot. Just go out there and shoot. Be happy. Go for the best. Never good enough. All right, guys, thanks a lot for stopping by. Sorry I rambled on, but it is a podcast, and a podcast is where you should ramble. This is Impulse Kitty Productions Digital Film Podcast, signing out.